This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Hi, and welcome to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show here on Plains FM 96.9. My name is Kate, and I'm an alcoholic. The purpose of this show is to increase public awareness of Alcoholics Anonymous as an effective means of recovery from the disease of alcoholism. Our show has two parts. First, we'll talk a bit about alcoholism, what it is, and what AA can do to help. Then, we'll interview a recovering alcoholic who is an active member of AA. I'm now going to ask our guest to read the AA preamble, which is read at the start of every AA meeting.
AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Thank you. So what is alcoholism? Alcoholism is a disease, not a disgrace. There's no shame in having an illness or a disease. An unusual feature of this disease is that it will do whatever it can to convince you that you do not have it. However, once it has a hold of you, the progression of symptoms is like the classic disease model, and the victim is as helpless as a sufferer of cancer. If you are an alcoholic, you are at the beginning of a long road that usually ends in one of three places: prisons, institutions, or death. If you think this sounds dramatic, we can assure you that our collective experience has shown this to be true. The challenge is to convince the alcoholic to admit that they need help and become willing to seek it. Denial is a major symptom of alcoholism. The alcoholic is often the last one to recognise it and admit that they have it. A definition of alcoholism is that it is an allergy of the body coupled with an obsession of the mind. The allergy is the physical aspect of the disease. After having the first drink, the phenomenon of craving develops and we lose control over when we will stop drinking. The old saying is, one is too many and 1,000 is never enough. And yet, because of the obsession of the mind, the mental aspect of the disease, the alcoholic is compelled to keep picking up the first drink. This makes us powerless. We often hear from sober alcoholics that many doubted whether life could be fun without alcohol. Fortunately, those same people report that their lives have improved dramatically since they became sober. The 12-step program of recovery, which is discussed at meetings and which is outlined in the Alcoholics Anonymous Big Book, is how we get sober and maintain our sobriety one day at a time. This program has a proven track record of helping otherwise hopeless alcoholics to achieve long-term sobriety and recovery. It has taught us how to enjoy life sober. Okay, for anyone who has just joined us, you're listening to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show here on Plains FM 96.9. And for tonight's show, we're going to do something a little bit different. We are looking at more about alcoholism and the step one of the 12-step Alcoholics Anonymous program. Firstly, though, we'll start with chapter 3 from the Alcoholics Anonymous Big Book, More About Alcoholism. Most of us have been unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics. No person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, it is not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove we could drink like other people. The idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. We learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that we were like other people, or presently maybe, has to be smashed. We alcoholics are men and women who have lost the ability to control our drinking. We know that no real alcoholic ever recovers control. All of us felt at times that we were regaining control, but such intervals, usually brief, were inevitably followed by still less control, which led in time to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralisation. We are convinced to a man that alcoholics of our type are in the grip of a progressive illness. Over any considerable period, we get worse, never better. We are like men who have lost their legs. They never grow new ones. Neither does there appear to be any kind of treatment which will make alcoholics of our kind like other men. We have tried every imaginable remedy. In some instances, there has been brief recovery, always followed by a still worse relapse. Physicians who are familiar with alcoholism agree there is no such thing as making a normal drinker out of an alcoholic. Science may one day accomplish this, but it hasn't done so yet. As previously mentioned, tonight we'll be speaking on step one of the 12-step Alcoholics Anonymous recovery program. Step one is we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and our lives had become unmanageable. I'd just like now to ask Debbie D from California to speak with us on step one.
Well, thanks for having me. The first step in recovery is we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, dash, that our lives had become unmanageable. And there's really two separate thoughts to that, because I used to put instead of the dash and, which sort of implied, well, when you quit drinking, your life will become manageable. And it really is two separate thoughts. First of all, I did not believe that I was an alcoholic. I did not believe that I was powerless. I had information indicating that. I had information about alcoholism. But I took my first drink at 12 years old, and it changed my world. It was also the night of my first drunk. What we come to here in the program is that for most people, alcohol is their problem. For people like us, it is our solution. We don't know or understand alcoholism isn't a weakness. It's not a moral issue. It's not a deficiency. It's an illness. And that 1 out of 10 people appear to have this allergy, this abnormal reaction. Well, when something makes you feel on the inside the way alcohol does, and it gives you that feeling of feeling good inside, superiority, at ease with yourself, at ease with the world about you, you really don't have a willingness to give that up. But in most every single case, it eventually becomes the problem, but we're the last to see it. There is no alcoholism in my family, so there weren't any members that you pointed at and said, they have a drinking problem, and you could see the personality changes. There weren't any of those. So when I started drinking and it began progressing, it was a strange thing, phase she's going through. She's a teenager. They all go through strange, you know, out-of-this-world things. But my drinking progressed, and it progressed very rapidly. I'm here, one of those people that I cannot say I'm here because I drank too much or drank too long. It's got nothing to do with quantity of drinking. It has nothing to do with the length of time we were out there drinking. It has everything to do with what it does for us on the inside and the destruction that we, our own selves, can create as the result of drinking. And I did not want to give that up at all. And after being introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous, it really was a situation where, again, I had all the information, what alcoholism looked like, sounded like, but until it got below my eyebrows and hit what we call that 2-foot drop from our head of information to our gut, our innermost self, was I then able to begin the changes needed with that surrender. And that is a surrender that I personally choose to acknowledge every day, my powerlessness over this liquid form of change for me that I respect greatly. I don't, it's no joke. It is no joke for me. That my life had become unmanageable, what I realized is, yes, alcohol, the drinking, took it into a tremendous series of circle-in-the-drain unmanageability. What we often say is that we ended up getting a new manager, which most of us find sometimes through the group and sometimes eventually through a power greater than ourselves. For me, it was about that even though initially because of the drinking it became unmanageable, I do not have the ability to manage, control everything in my day. People, places, and things come into my day all the time that I could not keep out, nor would I want to keep out. It's part of how, it's more like how I've learned how to respond to life instead of react to life. These are the big things that are different for me now. So making that admission is the first step, because without admission, without awareness, there can be no change. Thank you.
That's amazing. Thank you very much, Debbie.
For me, my experience with step one is that when I realized that I had trouble with my drinking, that it wasn't allowing my life to be manageable anymore, was around 15 months ago. And everything in my life had literally fallen to pieces. Leading up to that, I had had a period of sobriety where I felt like I had my drinking under control. I wasn't drinking as much, but I had replaced that with other substances because I basically could not do life on life's terms. I couldn't deal with the realities of life, the feelings that happen day in and day out. So I needed something to take me out of myself. I couldn't just deal with Kate and Kate's life on those terms. And when I returned to drinking after a period of about 7 or 8 months of abstinence, very quickly I was becoming a daily drinker, drinking on the job, drinking before picking up my daughter from school, and on the particular day where my life's manageability absolutely hit rock bottom, I had dropped my daughter at school that morning and was intending to pick her up. I was going to work and ended up coming to being arrested outside my client's house, and I couldn't have told you what happened. It's only through reliving that from my client's experience that I know now what happened that day. For me, though, the unmanageability had been that, as I said, I couldn't deal with any of my life on life's terms without having either alcohol or drugs in my system. To say I was powerless is an understatement. I didn't choose at all that day to pick up alcohol. I had been abstinent for such an amount of time that I really thought I had it under control. And as I say, as a parent, I had every intention of picking my daughter up that day. However, I ended that day in a police cell, my daughter sitting at school waiting for me, not knowing where her mum was. And I'd always prided myself on being a good parent, which I look back on now and can laugh. But, you know, that's this disease. It's an absolute state of powerlessness, of baffling and incomprehensible demoralisation that we learn to understand in AA. So step one for me, when I could finally admit my powerlessness over alcohol and that my life had become unmanageable, meant that finally I could do something about it. And it's when I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous where I learnt what I could do about it and taking accountability for those things. I'm now going to ask Jake to share about the first step.
Hi, well, thanks for having me on, Kate. The first step of Alcoholics Anonymous is, just quoting it, is we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Now, I found that there's a lot of alcoholics who are active drinking, they're in the bars, you know, they'll raise their hand and say, yeah, I'm an alcoholic, so what? Or, you know, year round, you know? And you know, that's an awareness, that's a little bit of an awareness of it, but it's not admitting it. And once you really admit that, hey, I've got a chronic and progressive disease that leads to some pretty dire consequences for me, you know, in AA we say, you know, it leads to jails, insanity, or death. And, you know, insanity that you could substitute institutions, rehabs. You've been in a rehab? Well, you've been to an institution. And, yeah, it's a hard piece of news to digest. And, you know, I first, you know, got confronted with that reality when I was 20 years old. And even by that age, I'd been after it hard. You know, it's been 5 years since I'd had a sober day. You know, because I was just constantly either high on weed or, you know, my favorite dynamic duo was weed and alcohol, and but yeah, it was daily, and that was how I was going to cope with this world. I could do this world. I could see myself getting to, you know, retirement. You know, the old man on the front porch in a rocking chair with a joint in one hand and a cold beer in the other. I could do this life like that. But it had already stopped working by 20. You know, the highs were getting lower, the lows were getting deeper, the consequences were getting more and more severe, and my life was getting channeled into a very narrow set of options that revolved primarily around, can I get high every day? That becomes a very, you know, that wasn't the good life I had planned, you know, and more and more, you know, I was just... making those sort of decisions. I dropped out of the college I was in, you know, taking something a lot more easygoing. You know, I was in a room, roommates were drug dealers and musicians. You know, it was, I wouldn't go out with a girl unless she partied like I did, you know. It became the thing that, you know, informed every decision I made. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was blind to it until I landed in that treatment center and they said, hey, take a look around, kiddo. You know, you're on the train. Your ticket's punched. This train goes to jails, insanity, or death. You still want to stay on the train? You know, you can. That's your choice. No one's an alcoholic unless they diagnose themselves. Self-diagnosed disease. And, yeah, I can undiagnose myself anytime. I can say, you know what, I'm powerful over drink. I'm powerful over drugs. My life is fine. I can do this, and I'd be lying to myself. Because I, you know, when I get on that train, it's, you know, I can't turn it off. It's the switch is on, and the vandal stole the handle. So you know, first thing is just to admit it. You know, I am what I am, and once I've admitted I've got a chronic disease syndrome, whatever you want to call it. I need to take advice on how to recover, and so that's really just the first step. My life's unmanageable because, you know, when I stop drinking, I've got a new problem. I can't do sobriety. I don't know how to do this life, you know, stone cold sober. I've been relying on these drugs and alcohol for so long that I don't know how to do it. If you've gotten yourself into that sort of place, I got hard news for you, but I also got good news for you, because the way of life that, you know, AA taught me has just opened up everything. You know, my whole life, every piece of the good life I thought I wanted has been restored to me. Family, career, a future. You know, I'm one of those optimistic people. I have to be. You know, it's sort of, you know, it's a better place to live. And, that's me on the first step. Thanks.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Jake, for that. Yes. So I'm just going to introduce Mandy, and she's just going to tell us her experience of step one.
Yeah, I'm Mandy, and my experience with step one, how I came to understand that I was powerless over alcohol and that my life was becoming unmanageable. It was definitely unmanageable. My world became smaller and smaller. I used to have time slots around my drinking. I wouldn't drink in the mornings. I wouldn't drink, you know, when I was going to university or before a job. But then my brain started telling me, oh, you know, you can just go home from work and maybe have a gin and tonic. And so I would do that. And then I'd kind of like look at the bottle and I'd go, well, I could probably just have a little bit more. And then before I knew it, I was like, now my clients are going to know that I'm like a little bit, you know, have some alcohol on my breath and I'm probably a little bit silly now. And so I'd call up and say, oh, I'm too sick or I've had something come up. So this started becoming a regular occurrence. Not only with work, but also just it was very easy to flick off my friends and any appointments I'd made with them, any appointments I made with anybody, until the point where I just knew that I couldn't trust myself that I was going to be able to be responsible to do, you know, anything really. So that's why my world became so small, because I just couldn't plan anything. I couldn't trust myself. I stopped talking to people also because I had the alcoholic blackouts where I would drink, and sometimes I just couldn't remember large time frames, spaces of time. And so I would tell somebody something one day or maybe even in the morning, and I couldn't remember what I told them that night. So I didn't want to be caught out in lies. I realized this was starting to happen to me because I was married at the time, and my husband and I would talk at the dinner table, and the next morning he would bring up the conversation we'd had the night before, and I had no idea whatsoever what he was talking about. I couldn't remember the movie we'd seen the night before, you know, all that kind of stuff. It was really awkward, and I felt panicked and anxious about that all the time. So yeah, that sort of was the reason that I had to, you know, stop communicating with most people at all. And then my life was also unmanageable because we were getting into fights a lot, which I understand now is sort of a hallmark of alcoholism as well, because I've learned that I really wanted to leave the house and drink like I wanted to drink. So I would have a little suitcase packed, and we would get into a fight, and I just grab my bag and run out the door, maybe for the night, maybe for a week. You know, I'd find some bed sit to go rent for a couple weeks, maybe, you know, and or I'd find some workmate that, oh yes, we've gotten to a big fight, you know, and I just need somewhere to stay for the night, you know, and people would have pity on me and let me stay at their house, and you know, but there was always drama going on in my life. I drove and drank all the time because I really was convinced that I could drink and drive quite safely, because I really watched the speedometer. I watched everything around me very carefully because I didn't want to, you know, be on the radar of the cops. I didn't want anyone to see me, you know, misbehaving in my car. So I drank and drove because I wanted to, you know, it wasn't because I had to. But I look back now and I can laugh at that. It was because I had to. It was because everything in my life was made easier, and I felt calmer and happier when I was drinking, doing it. I couldn't go for a tramp, a hike, you know. I couldn't go hiking. I couldn't go bicycling. Couldn't do anything that a drink wouldn't make better. But then in the end, obviously, if it was still that way, I'd still be drinking. But in the end, it just became very unpredictable. And that's the unmanageability was. I became very angry, and I would have outbursts of temper. Just pretty, you know, I just couldn't predict how I was going to act. And I was pretty miserable all the time. I realized that I was unable to take care of myself. I realized that my life wasn't going anywhere. And before that, I had been a real winner. I'd gotten my master's degree in the subject that I excelled in it. And that was just 2 years before the steep decline. And suddenly I was just doing some job that I couldn't even make it to. You know, so it was a rapid decline in about probably a year and a half to 2 years. Everything went backwards very quickly.
That's great. Thank you very much, Mandy, for your time.
For our listeners, if you've related to anything that you've heard or would like some more information about Alcoholics Anonymous, you can look us up on the web at www.aa.org.nz or call us on 0800 AA Works. There are 66 meetings a week in Canterbury, so it's likely that there's one near you. Join us next week to hear from more AA members sharing their experiences. Our show airs every Monday at 6 p.m. on Plains FM and repeats on Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. You can find podcasts of all our past shows on the Plains FM website at plainsfm.org.nz. That brings us to the end of the show. Thank you for listening, and remember, if you want to drink, that's your business. But if you want to stop, we can help. You don't have to do it alone. And listeners, we'd love to hear from you, so please email us at laura@plainsfm.org.nz. We will now close the show with the Serenity Prayer, as we do in every AA meeting. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. You've been listening to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show on Plains FM 96.9. Desperado.